Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. 77 years ago, fascism in Europe was vanquished. The price paid for this victory was staggering. That experience remains part of Russia's political and historical DNA to this day. On this edition of the program, we discuss why Victory Day is honored in Russia and largely forgotten in the West. To discuss this and more, I'm joined by my guest here in Moscow, Maxim Suchkov. He is director of the Center of Advanced American Studies at Moscow State Institute of International Relations. And we have Dmitry Babich. He's a political analyst and editor at InnoSmi Internet Media Project. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Maxim. Maxim, it's Victory Day. Victory Day in the Great Patriotic War, as it's called here in Russia. And if you go down the streets, you see the St. George ribbon. You see the flags are all out. The Victory Day is renowned for its military parade and the president giving a speech. What makes it important this year, as opposed to the very first one and all the ones in between? Go ahead.
Well, I think the meaning of the Victory Day is important in at least three dimensions. One, it's a war that has united the entire nation in blood. Every other Russian family have relatives or distant relatives have either fought or been engaged in this war in some form or the other. So this is, as you accurately mentioned, this is in the country's kind of DNA. The second important aspect of it is this is an event, a milestone event in the Russian history that has become the core of the state identity in the post-Soviet Russia. Because in the early days of the Soviet Union, the most important date was the November the 7th, the revolution. In the post-Soviet Russia, it is the May 9th that is the key date kind of shaping the state identity. And finally, and I think that echoes directly to your question, it is important because it is not just about Russia. It's about, the human sacrifice. It's about the human tragedy. And it's about the ability of great powers, regardless of their geopolitical disagreements, to come to their senses at a critical moment for the world, and it's a sign that political games may come to very, very far and put the world to the threshold of annihilation. And this day is a reminder that this shouldn't ever happen.
Well, these are words of great wisdom here. I completely agree with your assessment. Dima, let's kind of flip it upside down. Victory in Europe is celebrated on May 8th because of the time differences and all of that when the war came to an end. But it's not something that is really widely remembered or even honored at all in the West. And even as a child growing up, because my father was a veteran of the Second World War, we thought of it, but not on the same grand scale. It hasn't been for a very long time. Hollywood has kind of taken up the slack. We get World War II films still, but that's just about it. A huge difference here in Russia and in the West. Go ahead, Dima.
Well, I think the main reason, of course, the scope of the war, because the losses that the Soviet Union and particularly the Russian nation had to suffer were much greater than the losses of, say, the United States or even of the UK, even though I will not underestimate was the role of the UK and the United States in defeating fascism. But also, let me put it like this. For the West, Russia is primarily the loser in the Cold War. For us, Russia is primarily the victor in the World War II. So you have these, competing narratives. The situation is very complicated. In the Western press right now, I'm very, very sad to read when they say that the Victory Day is given a militaristic meaning in Russia, Putin uses it for his own purposes. Well, in fact, for many years, under Yeltsin and under Putin, Victory Day was used to pronounce solidarity with some of the Western countries, at least those who were our allies in the fight against fascism. I remember how in 1995, Bill Clinton, Chirac, all the Western leaders came to Moscow, and there was absolutely no question. As the Moscow Times, which was a very different newspaper then, as the Moscow Times put it, the role of Russia in defeating Nazi Germany is indisputable. That was the beginning of their article. It's very difficult for me to imagine an article like that published in Western press now. And it's very sad.
Yeah, that's my next question, Maxime. Not only is reverence for the for victory in Europe losing any kind of meaning, we have just the reverse, and Dima's already hinted at it, is we have a form of revisionism. So not only is, the Soviet Union not given, and the peoples of the Soviet Union given credit for the destruction of fascism in Europe, it's being diminished. It's actually being played down, even to the point where, well, it was the Soviet Union's fault that the war started in the first place. We've gone through this entire, array here. It's really quite remarkable, and it's actually happened quite quickly. Maxime.
I agree. I look at it in two ways. On the one hand, it is part of the greater revision of history that is taking place in the Western societies, where a lot of advocacy groups in the U.S. and elsewhere are revising their own history. Not just the history of other states or international. So that's part of that pattern or trend. On the other hand, throughout the human history, the most important thing was whose army wins. In the 21st century, in the growing technological and information age, it's important who narratives wins. So, by trying to tackle the most important thing, the most important identity-making element of the Russian society and the Russian state, it's part of this, greater geopolitical struggle against Russia, in my view.
Well, Dima, the same thing, question to you. We have through the... The New York Review of Books used to be a bellwether for intellectual thought in America. Unfortunately, it hasn't been the case for a very long time. But I can remember like Stephen Cohen and John Mearsheimer and the greats, debating the importance of the settlement in Europe after the war and how it created the geopolitical environment that gave birth to the post-war environment. And so much of that seems to have just been peeled away. And again, just to delegitimize any kind of positive role that Russia has played on the world stage in the last century, it's really quite remarkable.
Well, it's true. And I think it's always interesting to see how your enemy views the situation. So for me, for example, it was very interesting to read an article by Leonid Bershitsky in Bloomberg, where Bershitsky basically put that question, why is Putin so concerned about history, primarily about the history of World War II? And then Bershitsky gave the answer himself. If Russia was an aggressor together with Germany, as many historians now claim in the West, as many politicians claim, if Stalin was an ally of Hitler, indeed, then Russia is not the victor, it's not the liberator, then Russia has no place in the Security Council of the United Nations, that we can do with Russia whatever we want. And sadly, this is partially true, at least this is what they're trying to do. And the attempts to poke fun at Victory Day celebrations in Russia, the attempts to poke fun at the St. George Ribbons, these are not innocent things, Let me put it like that. Few people understand it in the West, but the victory in World War II gave rise in Russia to, I would call it a pacifist sentiment. What did all these dissidents have in mind when they said in the 80s, I remember, Sergei Kovalev, when they came to power, almost came to power in the 90s, what did they say? They said, the Soviet Union or Russia has no enemies. We have no enemies in the world. We just have a few nations which were done wrong by Stalin. We have to apologize, and then everything will be fine, you know. We will have no enemies. And we apologized under Gorbachev, we apologized under Yeltsin, we apologized to the Baltics, you know, recognizing that Stalin-Ribbentrop Pact was bad back in 1989, it was done by the Soviet Parliament. We apologize to the Poles, you know, acknowledging Katyn and other indeed awful Stalin's massacres. But the response was not what the dissidents expected. It was more and more hostility. So to my mind, what happened, it's a story of biblical proportions. We fought against Nazi totalitarianism. We destroyed communist totalitarianism inside the Soviet Union. And now we have the third totalitarianism, the liberal one, which is no less cruel, no less deceitful than the communist one. And this third totalitarianism does not acknowledge our victory over Nazi Germany. For them, we were allies of the Nazis.
Maxime, what's really, you know, I in my introduction, you know, vanquishing fascism in Europe, but that is not the Western narrative right now. It was the Soviet Union defeated Germany. Okay, because they want to take the ideological element out of it. And Russia is very insistent that it must remain, okay? And this is, and I think this is so very important because of trends that are going on in Europe right now. We can talk a little bit about what's going on in Ukraine as well. But there's this refusal to look at it in ideological terms. Go ahead.
Well, there is a refusal to look at it in ideological terms in the way they were framed, you know, shortly after World War II, but definitely not refusal to look at it in modern day ideological terms, you know, with this quote unquote democracy versus autocrats kind of thing. This is a kind of a different type of framing of the ideological struggle that is now being waged. I totally agree with you and with what my colleague said. It's, you know, it's an attempt to first to delegitimize the victory. Then, you know, you try to push Russia out, you know, out that pedestal of the victors. But then come very practical and things such as, you know, the removal of Russia or the attempt to remove Russia from the UN Security Council that has already been taking place, you know, the attempt to review the post-war architecture, you know, in the very principles and the basis of it and try to restore a new world order on very different principles where Russia is not a player, rather a payer.
I want you to hold this very important thought. We have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Maxime, I had to jump in. We had to go to a break here, but you were talking about the nature of European architecture. Let's take a look at that. You know, came as a result of the war, the end of the Cold War, and now, because this is really at the kernel of it all, about what kind of security arrangement that Europe needs. Go ahead.
Well, exactly. I was saying, you know, it's important, I think, from what we observe today for the Western states and the U.S. in particular, to ensure that Russia is not part of the new European security arrangement that is now emerging. It is not a player in that arrangement, but rather a payer, both to Ukraine and to Western institutions, not just with financial, you know, assets that have been frozen outside the country in foreign banks, but also morally, politically, you know, because you always have to restore a new world order and a new security arrangement on the ashes of the old one and on the basis of something. You know, back in the day was on the basis of the German and Japanese military infrastructure and their political ambitions. Both Germany and Japan were successfully integrated into the Western states, you know. But today, it's an attempt to you know, turn Russia into that type of place, if we can call it this way.
Even though Russia was not militarily defeated, see, because that's it, it gets to the point of it here. Demon, let me go to you, because that's what they want. They want a vanquished Russia so it can be integrated like the vanquished countries of Germany and Japan after the Second World War. Demon, jump in.
Again, this is one of the problems that Russians are dealing with, you know, how to explain it. Traditionally, the United States was not a vengeful country. You know, we have lots of examples when a former enemy became an ally overnight, you know, like Germany became an ally of the United States.
Dima, it became an ally, but it was, it was a supplicant as well. Okay, it's it's not friendship of equals, so it's not ally.
Exactly. That's why I'm coming back to this image, to this idea that a lot of people in Russia had that Soviet Union really had no enemies, just people insulted by Stalin. So we have to apologize, and it will be right. And this view was embraced by dissidents, but also it was embraced by Gorbachev. And to a large extent by Yeltsin. Yeltsin to a lesser extent than Gorbachev, because Yeltsin already saw Yugoslavia and a lot of other things that didn't fit this narrative. But still, you know, just because this narrative is so optimistic, people are lazy by nature, you know. We want to believe the best. So indeed, the majority of Russians believe that this was plausible, you know. We apologize and everything, everything is fine. You know, we're going to be probably, as Edward Wozanski said, we probably are going to be an ally of the United States, just like Germany and Japan became allies of the United States after World War II. That didn't work because, first, the West changed generally. The United States changed. It's a completely different country from what it used to be in the late 80s when perestroika started. I think a lot of leaders would be very upset about what happened in the last few years. I don't think, you know, in Europe, Helmut Schmidt was very much against the anti-Russian style of German politics in the last few years. Not only against, people the hawks, but also against Angela Merkel, who was the engine of anti-Russian sanctions. In France, obviously, Jacques Chirac was very upset about the attitude that the European Union at large and France in particular took towards Russia. But in general, this idea, you know, becoming a friend from a foe didn't work. And I think it worked primarily not because of Russia, but because of the West. The West changed. It adopted a new ideology, a lot more belligerent, a lot more radical than before. And Russia did not realize it first. So that's why we have this prolonged period of indecisiveness in Russian foreign policy, when we did contradictory things, you know. We kept saying, we put our hopes on the goodwill of the United States, on the goodwill of France and Germany. Influence, we hope they will influence the regime in Kiev. That didn't work. And unfortunately,
you've mentioned the regime in Kiev. Maxime, this is one of the things I find very problematic in this age of censorship. It's so important to be able to say the truth of what's going on and what kind of political elements the U.S. and the European Union have been supporting in Ukraine since 2014, when there was the illegal overthrow of a democratically elected government. And so the groups I'm talking about, ADAR, Pravda Sektor, Azov, all these people here that are not shy in their ideological dispositions. And this is well known in the West, but publics don't know it because it's overlooked or not seen as important, or these are a small number of individuals that are always passing it off for some reason. But it's really quite poignant here on Victory Day in Russia, when the West is supporting the kind of forces that the Soviet Union vanquished 77 years ago. Go ahead, Maxi.
Well, I think the art of the policymaking is the art of setting the right priorities. So I want to go back to what I started with, talking about that today's Victory Day is important in the sense that it's a reminder of the human sacrifice and the ability of the great powers to work together. I think as we move forward, any other less veterans per year from that war, and the memory of that war is no longer fresh for the new generations. And, you know, the history of that war is complicated. The history of the Soviet-American and British alliance is complicated. So there was, on a number of occasions, an appreciation on the part of Moscow of a need for a new basis for Russia-West cooperation. And Putin made his famous speech at the UN General Assembly in 2015, calling for a new anti-Hitler coalition against ISIS. That did not work out. So we don't really see on the horizon an enemy that would potentially unite Russia in the West. So the quality of the elites have changed in the West dramatically. And the new elites have chosen the priority and getting back to this domain of great power rivalry, where Russia is an adversary, an enemy, and every single tool and ideology is used to torpedo it. And Ukraine here is both a collateral damage and a tool of that policy.
Dima, we've talked on this program about changing narratives, and one of the narratives, even in my long spell in living in your country, is that I see commemorating Victory Day more as a victory of the peoples of the Soviet Union, of the Russian people, and all other nationalities that sacrificed, because that's the key word over and over again, is sacrifice that was made here, and it is not to promote or venerate any kind of ideology. It's more of human suffering and sacrifice, because it was the Soviet Union and it was a communist country. But when we think about it now in 2022, it's more about sacrifice. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. And I invite our listeners, our viewers, if they come to Moscow, to visit the Victory Park. What are they going to see there? They want to see a lot of monuments to Americans and the British, not only to the Russian soldiers, but to all the allies. They're going to see a Christian church, they're going to see a mosque, they're going to see a synagogue. And this pretty much summarizes the current, I would say, right attitude to what happened then in the 1940s. I think the majority of Russians agree with me, that Hitler was defeated by a coalition. There were communists in this coalition, but not only. There were Russian non-communists, you know, just people who were patriotic, many Orthodox Christian believers. There were, I don't know, Serb nationalists, Greek Orthodox believers, British liberals, French resistance fighters. It was a big coalition of people of very different opinions, who just realized that at that moment, Nazi Germany was a real threat. And in the same way, I don't want our program to be very pessimistic. I think that despite all the calls from Russia to unite against ISIS, against COVID-19, we failed so far. But let me remind you that we also failed to agree until 1941, you know. So I hope the turning point is near when we will agree, because it's really getting dangerous. It's really getting very, very risky what's going on. So it's time for us to agree and to come back to 1945 as a meeting point that can bring us together.
You know, Maxime, finally, the United Nations Security Council passed a resolution about Ukraine, and it wasn't very specific, but I mean, at least it was some kind of agreement here. But it as we think about this day. Victory Day, it really pains me that there's so little awareness that a major conflict is in the making. That's what we should consider today, what has been lost and what can be lost again. Go ahead.
Well, I think we still are not entirely safe from a major conflict, and you know the trajectory of things in Ukraine, all these recent leaks, New York Times and talking about, the alleged or real support of the U.S. intelligence for Ukrainian military operations against top Russian, brass and other is really, actually, I think, in my view, increasing the risk of a great power, direct great power escalation and clash. So I think, and that's why, in my view, what I just spoke, the quality of the leads is so different from what we dealt with World War II, shortly after the World War II, or even in the late 1980s, 1990s. So I personally, think that these times, hard times, usually give birth to greater leaders. We'll see. My optimism lies pretty much there.
Yeah, the quality of leadership in the West is, it's nothing to write home about, as they say. But I hope our viewers will take away from this program is that the people of the Soviet Union, particularly the Russian nation, suffered enormously. And to see Russia and its European neighbors where they are right now is really cause for concern and pause. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests here in Moscow. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, prosper.